Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Get your pencils out or your pens and your paper and write quickly. But don't worry, we'll have a list of all the book suggestions for you by the end of the show. Daniel Golden is with us, one of our favorite book people. He's the proprietor of Boswell Books, an independent bookstore, and a fine one it is on Downer Avenue in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And we are going to talk books this hour, give you recommendations of gifts you may want to give, or the best books that you want to read over the holidays or into 2014, the best books of 2013. He has tons of recommendations. He came up with, we got a two-page single-space thing here of Daniel's fiction, nonfiction, best of, kids' books, books for women, books for men, local books, which are hot this year, he said, traditional biographies, and I have a list of my top, actually I keep adding to it as the day goes on, but I think it's 11 at this point, and I realized that I read over 65 books last year for this show, just for this show, and I read a few on vacation, so I read a lot of books. How many? So Daniel is with us. Hi, Daniel.
Thank you for having
me.
Do you keep them in a separate category? You say this is a book that is sort of a work book, and this is a personal book. Do you have that sort of?
I only get to personal on vacation. The rest are all workbooks. As you can tell, my list is almost all nonfiction. I just don't. And then I want to do classics. I like Dickens, so I do a lot of Dickens, and I've done some other fiction during vacation, but that's only a few weeks
a
year.
So the only way you can get to read Dickens is if you find a Dickens expert. And then maybe you'll say, well, background reading.
Yes, exactly.
Well, I completely feel for you. That's very much what happens with me between the events and publishers asking us for recommendations and customers who've written books.
I'm sure.
You know, one of the reasons why we have an in-store lit group is so that I can have one book a month where I can say it's something that I wanted to read that I didn't get the chance to read and it feels too late, so we can go back to it and say, well, I'm forced to read it for this book club, and then I multipurpose it into a blog post. And then, of course, then I think, oh, I can do an event around this. And so, but I did – it became so obsessive with all the wonderful novels out there that I think I've already plotted out what we're reading in the in-store book group through next May.
Ooh, good
so,
for you.
Well, there's just a lot of wonderful novels, and I couldn't get to them. And many of them, as one of the trends that the Journal Sentinel, Mike Fisher and the Journal Sentinel said, is a lot of them are really fat.
Yeah.
So now the if I read too fat a book too often for the book club, they will rebel. And they will take control and kick me out and put in an interim coordinator. So I can't – I have a bit of – I don't think they'll let me do – they might let me do Luminaries or Goldfinch, but they wouldn't let me do both of those. And that's one of the weird things is the two hot fiction books for us at least are Eleanor Catton's The Luminaries, which won the Man Booker Prize, and The Goldfinch, which has gotten some of the best reviews of the year and will show up on a lot of best of lists. That's the third novel from Donna Tartt. She comes out with one, I don't know, is it every 10 years?
Mm.
And 700 pages, 800 pages.
Wow.
I think that, you know, when I compare our sales to these books from last year, what was hot, they're down a little, and I think it's intimidating. Like, these are the books that everybody's talking about. I don't want to read an 800-page book.
Yeah,
so,
right,
I mean,
right.
I've heard they're both, you know, I read them now. But
so let's talk about the state of the business during 2013. It's been flourishing. It's been hard. It's been what's noteworthy.
Well, there was an article in the Times today from Julie Bosman, and she took the temperature of some bookstores around the country, and she used the word wary, but I've seen some commentary that have said, well, it could have been hopeful, because it was a very mixed bag. Because on one sense, there was a study that came out that said ebook sales are flattening. And, of course, when we're talking about books, I don't care how you've read the book when we're on a
– right.
You know, but, of course, to stay in business, the printed book is my thing. We do sell ebooks from Kobo, but, you know, you're mostly get attached to your device. It's really hard to get a customer, and the margin is just it's tiny, 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 tiny.
Yeah.
So it's really – so go printed books, go so go us. Plus, there's no need for a bookstore. But – so that's good news. I do think about technology, that old saying that people overestimate its effects in the short term and underestimate it in the long term. So I don't think this really says anything about the future of the business. But for now, it seems to have plateaued a bit. So that was the good news. And then there was a whole bunch of bad-ish news. So one of them was there isn't a really hot book driving in sales. Last year, I know this may not – they may not be guests on the Kathleen Dunn Show, but 50 Shades of Grey was driving sales.
Oh,
I mean, whatever you say about it, it was a bookseller's good
friend. Did you read it?
I did not read it.
No.
I have to say, I would consider reading the first book because I – because when something's a phenomenon – I just want to know.
Right.
I just never got – it didn't
How
get
many
into
are
the
there?
Schedule. There's three. It's a trilogy. Like so many books, it's a trilogy. And, well, it comes off – well, it was fan fiction for Twilight, and that was Quartet. But I think at one point Twilight might have been positioned as a – it's one trilogy, and now here's the fourth book. So then you have to rename it. And then the other thing that was really driving sales is another author that is very commercial is The Hunger Games, Suzanne Collins' trilogy. And – whatever, good or bad, because I'm not here to debate because I know a lot of big fans of both and I can't comment. So I'm not the kind of person who makes comments about things I haven't read. They drove people into bookstores. And when you're looking at same store numbers, not just for independents, because we were not really getting the bulk of the sales. They were really mostly going to chain stores and book sections and mass merchants. But when you looked at someone like a chain like Books A Million, which it's in Wisconsin. They had, you know, their negative numbers. They would mention that those books weren't here this year. And when booksellers are recalling maybe an author that might have come on the Kathleen Dunn Show, they think back to the great holiday of 2010, where Steve Jobs was out. And that, that was just like, it was just, you know, it was just the magic. Author, you know, subject dies.
Right,
Walter
right.
Isaacson, one of the great accessible nonfiction authors that, you know, is number one bestseller material. Perfect subject, perfect author. And you just don't get that all the time.
Right.
I know that you're having Doris Kearns Goodwin on
tomorrow
for Bully Pulpit. And it's a fascinating book. Really, I hear it might make your top 10.
It might. I'm not done with it yet, but it probably will.
But Theodore Roosevelt is not the easiest. It's not the perfect storm of – it's not Lincoln. It should be Lincoln. So the book is selling fine, but it's not selling a Team of Rivals level, at least to my knowledge.
That's
what I'm saying. And that's – so it has to be everything together. I mean, the same thing's happened. Malcolm Gladwell, we're so – excited about Malcolm Gladwell.
He's coming,
He is coming, co-sponsored by Wisconsin Public Radio, January 31st at the Zelazo Center on the UWM, right off the UWM campus. Ticketed event, must say ticket event. That's the only, you know, that's the way we can get them, that's the way we get them. So it's a ticket with book, but we really keep it to just about the price of the book. All the fees and stuff are included. But the thing about the new book is it's it's doing great, and but David versus Goliath. It's about underdogs. Well, the last book, Outliers, is about superstars. So it's a little juicier a topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I read the book. I thought it was fascinating. I have lots to say about it. And it is, you know, and it's one of our bestsellers for fall. So that's been so comes right back to it. But it's not one of those books where the person who's going to read one book a year comes in. It's going to be Malcolm Gladwell fans. Interestingly enough, Outliers and Tipping Point are still selling like crazy. It's sort of like when Jeanette Walls had her new novel, Glass Castle, popped onto the bestseller list again, because that book will never go away. That's just a classic for the ages, and good for her. but it, you know, and that book was one of those books that drove people into the store. And so I think booksellers are dealing with that. Like everything else, on the local level, it's always about weather. It's not my greatest December weather-wise. We were very, very, very lucky the last few years that we've just had perfect weather.
Warm.
Warm, not too much precipitation. I have this really great customer who tries to take my temperature every week. How am I feeling on a scale of 1 to 10? And this is the way people are, the customers are. Everybody's very engaged. But one of the things, he's like, I'm working on the weather. And I was like, I didn't want to have the heart to say, oh, yeah, I had a storm last Sunday, I had a storm this Saturday. Your weather connection is off. But that said, there are really great books. There are these weird holes, and I think it's really up to you to fill them, because one of the holes, I was just talking, we have this one of our sales reps is working in the store today, Jason, and he's the Knopf Vintage Pantheon. I'm really great nonfiction. And I said, Jason, I'm mad at Knopf Vintage Doubleday because I just think that there's not as many strong solid biographies this fall as I usually get. And I said, I'm not talking memoir. I'm not talking group biography.
Right.
I'm talking like a classic, good author, good subject. And he said, well, we do have the Jane Franklin biography by Jill Lepore. And there's also a really good, of course, I knew he would have it. And that actually was that Jane Franklin book. That's top 10 for the year on the Washington Post.
Is it really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
A solid, solid book.
Great.
And there's also a Queen Anne biography that he was talking about, but I don't remember the author of that. But I was, I've been just kind of searching around because it's something that I put in people's hands between Thanksgiving and Christmas, and it's just been a little tougher. I went on Goodreads to see, because they have – I was looking up like, wow, do I find these books? And they had Goodreads reader is voting for their favorite biography history book. And what I found was a lot of group biographies. So Girls of Atomic City, the Astronauts' Wives, Boys in the Boat, a lot of group, but not a lot of solid. The book that won – it was a landslide, so I think there was some ballot stuffing. Was the Jim Henson biography?
And really,
which has actually been a bit a success, uh-huh. And we've sold it okay. It's not been, but I did think, oh, I was hoping for something. I was like, I keep looking for something that's going to pop out and go, oh, right. Why am I missing this? And
right.
Maybe readers
can tell me. So Dalek's book, my list is, we balance each other because mine's all nonfiction, but this was the Kennedy year, the 50th anniversary. So Camelot's Court Inside Kennedy's White House, Robert Dalek, not at the top of my list, but he's the preeminent Kennedy historian.
I have something to say about this.
Well, will you please? Did
yes.
you? Is
well,
that
I
selling?
Would say, well, this is one of the interesting things that I found. I thought we had a very good Lincoln run. And I thought, okay, we always do well with Kennedy books. And Dalek is one of the premier Kennedy writers. In fact, we have not had a great success. We had a lot of books, brought in a lot of books for the memorial. We had it wasn't even – I looked at demand from our wholesaler, and it wasn't even the top book. The top book was I just wrote about this too. I was just ranking them.
Not the bodyguard, the Secret Service agent.
No. It was a Henry Holt history. Well, maybe KP can figure it out. but in fact, I think there was too much stuff and it canceled each other out. I think it was way overpublished. I mean, publishers are always looking for these anniversaries, these niches, hoping for that media bite. And either it didn't get the attention that they thought, maybe there was some news story that pushed them away, or there was a different angle to the anniversaries, because there were certainly plenty of media, but the books didn't seem to get the attention that they got, and we just didn't see the sale that we were hoping for.
Do you think that they were looking at a generational thing here, that you have to have been a certain age for that to have hit you deeply, and if you weren't, chances are you might not be reading about Kennedy now? I wondered that.
I don't think millennials are buying hardcover history biography that much anyway.
Right.
And we're all dead for the Lincoln stuff. So
yeah, that's true. We're all dead for the Lincoln stuff.
I think. Except for our reincarnated friends. and ghosts. Right. But they have trouble picking up the book. I don't know. I think the Dalek was probably the best book of all the Kennedy, but it was I felt sort of bad, and I thought, well, if I was a publisher, I probably would have I would have looked at all that stuff coming out and said, I think I'll do mine next year.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, give me your top three. Then we got to go to phone calls, and we got a lot of people.
I've been working on
top
this.
Three fiction
okay,
and
thank
nonfiction,
you, fiction.
And you've also divided it male female.
Well, I I did. And actually, that was – I was looking at Hot Sellers. And I do divide it because there is an audience difference. And that for the last – I'm sure if reader listeners are paying attention, they will know that up until last year, I was complaining that literary fiction by women isn't published for the holidays. And they don't publish in the fall. They publish for Mother's Day. They publish them in July.
Really?
They publish
really?
In January. And I just feel like there was some – just like they don't like green books. So there's all sorts of – crazy little superstitions in publishing. I just heard another one about green. I was watching a fashion show and reading some blog, and they said the woman at the magazine said, "We don't put people with green dresses on the cover of the magazine." And then, of course, the blogger said, "Oh, here's seven of them." So it's one of those things that people do publish plenty of green books, but when the book doesn't work, it's the kind of book where they change the jacket, and you can be sure that the paperback jacket will not be green.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't know. Maybe
right.
because it doesn't go with your eyes or
right.
something like that.
Right. Who knows?
So I did – I have two kinds. So I was like – I had gift suggestions for male writers and female writers, and then I had my personal books. I do feel the last 2 years, more so this year, it's been – there's been this other hole of literary books by men, and the women – Eleanor Catton, in the paperback, Alice Munro have really been dominating. I'm pushing for James McBride's book to get more of a some more momentum with winning the National Book Award. It's The Good Lord Bird. The reviews have been great. Also top 10 of the year in the Washington Post. And also tying into an artistic renaissance or high point for African-American culture with 12 Years a Slave.
What happened
and the
this
Butler.
Year with all the films? I know. We were talking about that at home the
that
other
there's
night.
A, just a really strong
yes. –
you know, it's just one of those weird – like I say, there's no biographies. There's lots – you know, and it just – there's a lot of Kennedy books. I think it's just – some of it is just luck of the draw.
Right.
Sometimes it's sort of – you know, sometimes it's a response to criticism that there are not enough – you know, I'm not saying in this particular case, but somebody will a bookseller like me, but maybe more likely someone at Barnes & Noble will say, "We're seeing this hole and you need to fill it." And then it gets overfilled because they don't just say it to one person because they figure, well, not everybody's going to fill the hole. And it's possible that there was some, you know, much as Saturday Night Live has gotten some criticism for not having
right.
an African-American,
right.
you know, that African-Americans aren't getting represented in film well mm-hmm. enough. And I think that's true. And so it just also happens that everybody comes out, you know, it comes out the same year. And it's not that many. It's just it happens to be two of the best movies of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, more power to it. So so I thought, well, if somebody gets really into it, they can read the James McBride, which is another – it's a Civil War story of the John Brown uprising.
Oh.
And it's about a man who actually poses as – this is funny because I just said the Saturday Night Live – who poses as a woman – to sort of go underground.
Oh.
So, because I think it was Keenan or Jay Farrow who said they weren't going to do any drag anymore to kind of force the hand of Saturday Night Live.
Huh.
So I think that's just one of those things. You definitely see these kind of things all the time, though. You'll be saying, "Wow, why is everybody doing turquoise covers?" Season.
I must say I hadn't said that recently, Daniel, but I'll notice it now.
That's something that the Daniels of the world say, not the Kathleens of the world.
No.
So let's take a call, I guess.
We got a lot of calls. The Good Lord Bird is the name of that one by James McBride. Okay. And one of my top picks, this is nonfiction, of course, was George Packer's book, The Unwinding. I found it challenging. I found it really an interesting look at how people are struggling economically in the country. Very unusual stories and really challenged my wisdom about things, too, or my perception of what's going on with people's lives and with some personalities as well. It's really – it's a very good book.
I've heard – incredible things about
Have
it.
You?
I bought a copy.
Good. Good.
Just won a big award. Did it?
Yeah. I didn't know that.
And made a pitch for the paperback, so now I can.
Good.
You know. One of the things about this book too, which is makes it crossover a little more, is it does read like a novel.
Yes.
And that is one of those things with nonfiction. When there's a really strong narrative, I can really increase the audience for it, as can everybody. You know, it's just any bookseller can say that, or if you read a newspaper. But it's fascinating when we love story, and there's nothing harder to sell than the biography that reads like a biography. You know, they want the criticism to be deftly woven into the story.
Right.
So that's very exciting, and I will make a renewed vow.
Okay. Okay. And our audience should also, Daniel and I would really like for Doris Kearns Goodwin to come to Milwaukee so that we could do an event and she could tell us about this book and about the presidents, and we could have a great event. So if anybody knows her, you tell Doris, come on to Milwaukee. We'll do an event. We'll have a good time, and it's a perfect fit.
Maybe somebody went to college with her who hasn't seen her in 30 years. Like,
you go.
You come to an event in Milwaukee, you can have dinner with her.
She could have dinner with us, Daniel. Hey.
I don't know if I'm on our list, actually. But.
I don't know if I am either. At any rate, she is on tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We're talking books this hour of the program. Daniel has a whole long list, and it's going to be on the Kathleen Dunn Show. I think KP is posting this list right now as we speak, and I have my – actually, it's 11 books. Actually, I think there are 12 on my list. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Well, you just added
– I added Bully Pulpit because I know it'll make the list. So mine's the top 11, my favorite – no, it's about 12, because I will add her, so it's 12. And Daniel's got local books and just all kinds of fiction and nonfiction and kids' books, and he just went to town here. So this will all be on our Facebook page, and then later he will have it on his blog, which is worth going to all the time, Boswell and Books, B-O-S-W-E-L-L, and books.com. So to you, our lines are jammed. We got people wanting to talk on email, and here's how you reach us, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin. Oh, and our guest is Daniel Golden. He is the proprietor of Boswell Books. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Daniel Golden is with us this hour, and we're talking about the best books of 2013. And, oh, we got the calls coming in. John in Richland Center is our first caller. Daniel, hi, John.
Hi, this is John from Richland Center.
Yes, hi, John.
I recommend two books. One is Perfect Storm by Sebastian Younger.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is about JFK's assassination tapes.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good winter reads.
What's the name of that one?
Assassination tapes.
Oh, the assassination tapes. All right. Thank you. Thanks, John, very much for the call. Email that has come in. Lynn writes her best books, The Roundhouse.
Just finished it, actually.
You just finished it.
I did. I read it because... remember, I have that list of books that I didn't get to, so we do it for our book club. And so I did it actually for two book clubs. We did it for an Instro book club.
Oh.
And then my sister, who I was visiting my sister and my mom for a few days, and my sister was in an airport and had nothing to read. So she called me up and said, all right, we're going to go through the airport bookstore and find something. And she wound up picking Roundhouse. So we had an informal book club over dinner as well. And it was very interesting because book clubs are just go in different directions depending on what people like or don't like about the books.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, wonderful. I mean, Erdrich is wonderful, probably one of the foremost writers of Native American fiction. And the difference, one of the reasons this book was by far, at least in my experience, for one unit store was the best sale we ever had in hardcover, partly because she put it in the context of a suspense novel. So she usually does a round-robin narrator. She kept it through the eyes of one kid. There was sort of a courtroom aspect to the novel and about tribal law. So she did everything people like about it, but because when you write a suspense novel, your pacing picks up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's an interesting book. So
yeah, good
recommendation.
Also, Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver. And the best of all, How the Light Gets In by Louise Penny.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I just saw – Louise Penny is currently – Jason, our buyer, does updates quarterly, our top 25 for a case. We don't do it more than that. Because we do a bestseller list every single week, and it gets posted on our Sunday blog. But every 3 months, we do a bestseller case. And actually, Louise Penny is number one. And her book actually hit – I think the Washington Post top 10 for the year. And that is very difficult for a mystery series. And this is not the first book in the series. It's eighth, I think. But the books get – the thing about Louise Penny is the books get more intricate as they go along. The characters get more woven in. So huge fanatics. Mm-hmm. There's probably some sort of Pennyphile group or something like that.
Thanks for your suggestion. Let's go to Shelley in Green Bay. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, Hi there. I'd like to recommend Wonder by R.J. Palacio, or I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name, but follows a young boy who has facial deformities and can't go to school, and then his first experience with school, he ends up going to middle school, and just is a really great book. It's a children's book, but I think for adults, they would enjoy it as well. It made me laugh, it made me cry, and I just really think it brought a lot of questions, making you think, what do we do as people in accepting other people's differences? So.
Did you know if the caller happened to read the Wall Street Journal article a couple of weeks ago about the book? It was about kids, adults reading kids' books, and that was the focus.
Uh-huh. Oh.
And it's wonderful. And you know how the Wall Street Journal is? Sometimes you can get access to the stories and sometimes you can't. This one you couldn't, and now you could. So you'll get to read a lot of background about the author. The author was the director of children's publishing at Workman. She wrote under a different name. She decided to write under a pen name, which is not that uncommon. An open pen name. Anyone can figure out who it is. But it's there's some really great kids fiction now, and we've seen that for several years. Last year, our big book for kids that we were selling to adults was a book called Counting by Seven. No, that's this year. Last year, it was Three Times Lucky by Sheila Turnage. It's a mystery set in the South. Not exactly a similar theme, but this Counting by Sevens by Holly Goldberg Sloan, I think, will really appeal to people who like Wonder. It is about a girl with some emotional problems making her way through life. I certainly see a lot of adults reading John Green, which has been, I think, crosses over a little with Wonder. And, of course, The Book Thief, now in theaters. We haven't sold, aside from when it's assigned in a class, I haven't sold Book Thief to a kid for years. It's always adults. Marcus Zusak, it was actually published as an adult book in Europe. This was one of these things. And I'm not sure if Wonder was specifically published for kids, but a lot of books like this that cross over were actually published, were written for adults, and the children's editor from the house buys it and says, okay, we're going to take out this curse word, this,
oh,
you know,
really?
And sort of massages it. Now, huh. Plenty of people are writing young adults for kids, but you do find with adult first novels that they sometimes don't really know. They're just writing a novel, and it's mm-hmm. not until you get to the publishing process that you understand more that a book gets slotted. Well, this idea of adults buying these kids' books has really thrown things, you know, it's really changed things around. Another author that a lot of adults are reading that definitely writes for kids is Sharon Draper. The other difference with Wonder is a lot of these other books were published 14 and up, 15 and up. A lot of the main audience for these books is like women in their 20s or something like that. But Wonder was actually published 8 to 12 or 10 to 14. So it wasn't even young adult. It was really middle grade. I love middle grade fiction because much better sense of humor. I just find the young adult, like even when a book's really serious, as she said, it's funny. And I just feel like the young adult, a lot of the young adult stuff is very seriously. And there's a lot more kind of joy. One of the books that I had mentioned that I was going to mention is a book called Better Nate Than Ever by Tim Federle. He, you know, we do a lot of school events. So we did some stuff with him. It was a lot of fun. But the book's now shown up on the top middle grade books of the year for both Publishers Weekly and the New York Times. It was in their top six middle grade books of the year. It's about a boy who runs away from home outside of Pittsburgh he's obsessed with theater and he wants to try out for the theater production of E.T. in New York, the Broadway production. A lot of family problems at home. He's a little unsure about his development and who he is as a kid. And it was written by somebody who'd been in Broadway. He was the children's choreographer for Billy Elliot. So it's very insidery, but it's also a really, you know, smart and very funny story. There's a sequel, so you happen to know that he does get a part. He does not get the role of Elliot. Mm. Alas, he's
alas.
The second understudy for the
thank
alien.
You, Shelley. And in my top five was, you know, it may not be all no. that. It's a good – the guy's a good writer, but this book, Trauma High, when you made me think of theater,
oh,
Michael
yeah.
Sokolov, which is, you know, a rough and tumble Levittown, Pennsylvania – school and the theater coach is absolutely wonderful and does cutting edge theater. So he gets all the kids who used to be football players to be on stage instead. And they go to win. They win all these awards from high school competitions all over the country doing stuff that's really on the edge. And he changes their lives. So many of them have gone into theater or they've done lighting for Broadway shows. He died recently, the teacher, but he was a teacher for a long time, and it's one of those inspirational, you do it, kids. He just changes people's lives, and I love stories about teachers who change people's lives.
I love them, too, and that's so funny that you say that because I didn't read the book, but somebody put it in my box with a little note saying, this book is for you, and it's not because I watched a little Glee in my day, but I do also love education narratives, and I've read a lot of them over the years. I've fallen off a bit, but it just sounded wonderful. My other sister, not the roundhouse sister. The other sister was a high school theater teacher for a long time.
Oh, really?
So she still keeps up with some of her best students, and one of them actually went to New York to try to act for a while.
Oh, give it to her for a present.
I know. It's on the list.
There you go. Yeah. All right, Shelley, thanks for the call. Our number, lines are open now, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Dawn on Facebook, I just finished Paul Theroux's latest book, The Last Train to Zona Verde, good insight into the African continent.
He is terrific travel writer. Nobody is.
Haven't read him.
He is, I think you would like him. He's a little cantankerous.
That's all right. I like people who are a little cantankerous.
He's been known to complain a bit about his travels, but just definitely a classic, especially the travel writing. He's written all kinds of different things, but definitely that's the thing that's always gotten him the best. It's one of those tricky things about writing is you get boxed in just like anything else. You know, somebody can sell their fiction, but not their nonfiction, and then vice versa.
Yeah. I miss track. Sandy D'Amato wrote to me a long time ago saying, do you want to do a show, when he was thinking about writing a book. And then we never connected. We'll have to get him on. You say that local books are hot. You're selling a lot of local books.
Yes, and I definitely say that D'Amato's is at the top of the heap. Good stock, life. And so he's doing a whole bunch of things. We're actually, coincidentally, we're having him tomorrow.
You are?
Yes.
Really?
And but he's also doing this Glorioso's and the Spice House, too. So I think it's trying to remember which is which. One is on Thursday, one is on Friday. I'm sure if you ask them.
Okay.
So he's, he's a beloved guy. He is started a cooking school in Massachusetts when he sold Sanford to his chef de cuisine, Justin Hamian. I hope I pronounced that right. And Sarah. And so he's now doing other stuff. And one of the big things was his book. There's very exciting. There's a Chicago publisher that's publishing him that's doing a lot of really interesting cookbooks. And they have actually two books because they also published the book Wisconsin Supper Clubs from this spring.
Oh, right.
And that's been selling really well for us as well. And it's supper clubs all over the state. I do believe Mr. D'Amato is one of those people that people travel from all over the state for his restaurant, and that should be a lot of fun. But I worry about regional books because I think I've said this before, a lot of the publishers that used to do regional books in Milwaukee, such as the Art Museum used to do books, the Public Museum used to do books, the Milwaukee County Historic Society isn't really doing books right now, and they get a little more expensive to do. But you're finding people doing these amazing books themselves. This is where all the new self-publishing is really paying off for us. There's just this amazing book called about the Schlitz Brewery that came out by Paul Bialas. He's been doing a lot of things around town. Last year he did a Pabst book, and lo and behold, the Pabst book started at $60, and as he's been doing it and it's been successful, the price has come down on the new book. So it's a beautiful package. There's a new book on the Pfister, the Hotel Pfister, that's out. That's really beautiful. And there's a really wonderful book called Leighton's Legacy by Eric Vogel and John Eastberg. John Eastberg is the historian at the Pabst Mansion.
Oh.
And Vogel is at Myad, and it is about the original collection that became the Milwaukee Art Museum. Spectacular book, really well priced at $75. And I just, now there's, As I've talked to the various, like Wisconsin Historic Society is doing local things too. Michael Perry's new book, which I think is connected somehow to Wisconsin Public Radio, the Big Top Radio book.
Yeah.
And so that's been really exciting. And both the Wisconsin Historic Society and the University of Wisconsin have picked up the slack as well. And then the other way we're getting these really great local books is through History Press and Arcadia Publishing, uh-huh. which do these regional books all around the country. And there's always something that we're selling. Right now, one of them has a book on Whitefish Bay. One of them has a book on Town of Lake. But I was looking up to see other parts of the state. They do various books all over the place. One is more text. One is more pictures. I would say they're not the packaging is not quite of Layton's legacy level, but that's been nice.
Yeah, good. Scott in La Crosse, hi.
Hi there, Kathleen.
Hi, Scott.
I got a couple things for you. One of which I just thought of when you were talking about local books. First of all, I would like to ask: could the book that you were referring to, the biography of Queen Anne, could that be subtitled "The Politics of Passion"?
I think so.
By Anne Somerset.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought it might be. I'm on hold for that. and when you were with the library, and when you were talking about the Supper Club book, it reminds me that a guy named Jim Drager has a book out. I think it was earlier in this year, called Bottoms Up, A Toast to Wisconsin's Historic Bars and Breweries.
Oh, yes.
In conjunction with the PBS, the Wisconsin Public Television documentary, and that's a great book. They did a wonderful job, and really points out why we are the beer drinking state that we are.
Mm.
But the book that I picked up on the new bookshelf at the public library today that I just started looking at, but for a certain segment of the population that flies might be of interest, is a book called Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel. And it's by this guy named Patrick Smith, who is an airline pilot and has a website called Ask the Pilot. And it's done in question and answer format. And it's just, as I say, I just started thumbing through it at the library and then wound up checking it out. But it goes through everything about, you know, things that you don't have to worry about that people do when they're in the air, and things that people maybe don't worry about that they should, and why we hate certain airlines so much, and what life is like for pilots, and what all the ins and outs, what's good and what's bad at airports. Looks like it's a real thorough little book, and I'm familiar with this guy from his website. I think he being a airline pilot himself, he's got some real interesting insights, so I think I'm going to like it, and I think others might too, for whom aviation is of interest.
Thank you, Scott. Great to talk to you. Thanks, Scott. Joan in Milwaukee. Hi.
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 A book that's going to drive me to Boswell as soon as the weather gets a little warmer is called The Moth.
Yes.
And it's stories from the radio, WHAD, 9 o'clock on Friday. Real, true stories, less than 5 minutes. So if you're old and prone to fall and you'll sleep with a book in your hand, you can read 4 or 5 pages and get a cross-section of storytelling. And I think storytelling might bring back whatever is gone wrong or is questionable about print books.
Mm. Yeah, that show has really taken off. We interviewed the author and had a lovely hour with her. I can't remember when, time just goes by, but it was... It is, when you talked about the power of story, too, that it's got to be in nonfiction, that we need a story. And The Moth is a testimony to that, isn't it?
I listen to it, too. So, yeah, absolutely.
It's very nice. All right, thanks, Joan.
And the book's selling very well. It was actually, last time I looked, it was out of stock everywhere.
Was it really?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that something? Oh, that's great. All right, give us some more recommendations, sir. Men for Men?
We were talking a little about Men. One of the things... that I was trying to find some good books, and some of my booksellers helped me. Hannah suggested Benediction by Kent Haroff, a book that came out from the spring. He is probably best known for a novel called Plain Song. He writes in the the Colorado flats, you know, the plains. And he's just really great at characterization. His books are kind of quiet, but they're also really powerful. Jason is really hot on the new Dave Eggers novel, The Circle, which is very different. He often almost writes in a journalistic style. This is in that sort of 1984-ish post-dystopian vision of the near future, where social networking and the social networking companies sort of take over our lives.
Ooh.
That's not too far from the truth. Jason is a really – he's a – very avid reader. And so I can often look to him for a lot of suggestions. His favorite book of the year was, and he told me that it's also Ann Patchett's favorite novel of the year, A Constellation of Vital Phenomena by Anthony Mara, which is set in Chechnya. And it was shortlisted for the National Book Award. And that's what he was voting on. I wanted Alice McDermott's Someone to win because that's the only one I had read. But that's just selfish. But that's a book that actually we're doing for our in-store book club in 2014 because I've just heard so many wonderful things about it. There are, of course, books written by women that I think men are going to cross over to. Another book that's shown up on a lot of best of lists, shortlisted for the National Book Award, top 10 of the year on the New York Times, Mary Louise Schumacher's pick on the Journal Sentinel was The Flamethrowers by Rachel Kushner. Not on the list, but I thought of it because we're doing it for our in-store book club for, I think, March, just because it's one of those books that I just kept reading about, reading about. It's about the art world in the 1970s.
Oh, okay.
And a multi-character story, and just does a spectacular job with it. And it's a book that I wish... You know, I was like, oh, I should have read this in galley form.
Yeah.
But you can't read them all.
There's always a lot to read. And you mentioned Ann Patchett. We did talk to her. Nice series of essays. I like to read essays. Maybe it's because, you know, I like essays.
Well, I have on my top five. I thought to myself, okay, I'm fiction. But actually, I'm about 2.5 fiction to 1 nonfiction, which means I read about 75 books, which means it's 22 nonfiction books. Now, some of them are... You know, the history of this department store in Worcester, Massachusetts. So so I don't know if it shows up on any best ofs in Milwaukee. But actually, I put the Ann Patchett on my list as well. This is The Story of a Happy Marriage. Mm-hmm. I particularly love essays that do – I don't want them to be connected or they're not essays. It's a thesis more.
Right.
But I do love when you have these disparate essays that come together to form somebody's life. And I felt like – there were two books I read this year that did that. One of them was Ann Patchett's book, and one of them was The Book of My Lies by Alexander Hemin, which came out earlier in the spring. He is an emigre from Sarajevo and has written all in the past novels and short stories about his life as sort of a somebody left behind, sort of man out of place, that kind of thing. And this time he wrote it through these essays, which were collected over the years. But they're about all different kinds of things, from soccer to chess to being a bully to Chicago. But you get such a strong feeling about him. I will tell you another person who was very excited about his book, which was David Sedaris when he came.
Oh, really?
That was the book that he touted. So my favorite nonfiction book. It's another sort of specialized thing, but I just thought it was a wonderful cultural history. Was the history of the Mary Tyler Moore Show? Mary and Lou.
I love
and
that
Ted.
Show.
People who love that show would
love
this
show.
Book.
Really?
You think you know everything about the story, but you don't know everything about the story. There were so many times that it almost didn't get on. It was so close to being canceled in the first year. It was at one point. It was the new feminism, and then the movement sort of left it behind, and then it was sort of the thing that was the anti-feminist show. So it's a fascinating book. She interviewed so many people for this. Not everyone. She didn't get to Mary Tyler Moore, but she does all the women writers. There were lots of women. You know, I Love Lucy had a woman writer. But there was never like a team of women writers like the Mary Tyler Moore show. And the developers, who were both men, said, to really get a woman's perspective, we just really have to have a lot of women involved in the show. And a really great interview with Valerie Harper, too.
Yeah, so. Good. All right. That's on my list for 2014, if I can get to it. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Daniel Golden is our guest. If you're missing some of these titles, some of them will be in the air, going to wherever the radio waves go. But we will have a fairly complete list here because Daniel's given a lot of thought to this. So on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and I believe KP has posted that during this hour, and a little bit later on Daniel's blog, please go to this because it's filled with all kinds of information about books, boswellandbooks.com. There will be suggestions more than you'll be able to handle. There'll be so many suggestions. And we're welcoming more phone calls, too. 800-486-8655 is the number. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. More phone calls. Nancy in Bailey's Harbor. Hi.
Hello. It's good to talk with you. And on the local note, Wisconsin, and you haven't mentioned poetry. So I would like to recommend the Wisconsin Poets Calendar. It actually is an annual of poems by Wisconsin authors. There has been a Wisconsin Poets Calendar for 28 years, and the 2013 is very good, and 2014 calendar is very good, too.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. And we lost the poet Seamus Heaney this year. Any book of poetry by Seamus Heaney, I think you should give as a present. I love Seamus Heaney.
It's actually a spectacular poetry fall. One of the weirdest things.
Is it? Oh, that's interesting.
Well, it's due to two authors in particular. There are many wonderful authors writing poetry, but there are two superstars, and they both came out with books at the same time, Mary Oliver and Billy Collins.
They
are consistently in our top 10. I mean,
isn't
since the books
something?
Came out. And it's they both have dogs on the cover. So I'm sort of like, what's going on? You know how you said this weird confluence of things is
right.
Like, if you had said to me, two of your best-selling books will be poetry and they'll both have dogs on the cover, I would have said,
All right.
It's a good, indeed a good calendar, by the way.
And I really like poetry. I love to read poetry.
I love to hear poetry.
Right.
Actually,
I do too. Well, you hear yourself. You read it. You read it out loud, Daniel.
Oh, I thought other people had to read it.
Well, somebody could read to you too. That would be okay. Helene, we're almost out of time, everybody. Helene in Madison. Hi.
I would like to tell you that I hadn't heard the subject for a while, but then I realized that this book had been a New York Times bestseller. And that it's about a subject that we all might have a little interest in or else we're avoiding. But it was about some life after death, dying. And the name of the book is Dying to Be Me. And it has been the most challenging and changing for me and for many others. It's by Anita Moorjani, Moorjani. And it is just noted by the hospital staff. And I think that there are others now, too, who are writing about that. I know there's one by a neurosurgeon also.
Right.
But I find it interesting. I don't know. I just think it's a pretty amazing subject for the whole human race.
Yeah, it always gets us talking. What's next? What's after? Thank you very much for the call. And let's go to one more call. Mary in Belleville. Hi, Mary.
Hi, I read a lot of good books this year, but two of my favorite were A Tale for the Time Being by Ruth Ozeki, and then another by an author I had never read before was The Sun by Philip Meyer.
Oh, those are both showing. Those are both, I think, on the top 10 of the Washington Post, too.
Whoa.
And
all right,
Ruth Ozeki on one of our books that we're reading for In-Store Book Club.
Oh.
Also, one of those books that people just kept coming in all year saying, why haven't you read this? Why haven't you read this? So very highly recommend it, too.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
You have good taste, Mary. All right, these are all going to be, how are we doing this? We're putting them up on our Facebook page, and you're putting them up on
the blog afterwards.
On the blog,
yeah.
Which is great. What are you reading at the very moment?
I just read a book called The Short History of Literature by John Sutherland.
Oh.
And it was vacation reading because he wasn't coming, and I just wanted to read something different, and it got me very, we were, very much my appetite got whetted for the classics again, because I was just learning about all sorts of things that I didn't really know before. And I thought it highlighted a lot of gaps. Now, I feel like I can fudge at dinner parties now. You know, if somebody starts talking about the first American novelist, Anne Bramwell. I can't fudge it until I read them. I'm still working on it. I can probably take a go with the Bronte sisters now.
Thank you, Daniel. Thanks, as always.
A pleasure.
And thanks for keeping all this alive, bringing people in and the book clubs. And it's just so good.
Fun.
It's a worthwhile way to live, I'd say. Daniel Golden, proprietor of Boswell Books on Donner Avenue in Milwaukee. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing the show, to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Great conversations ahead, and join us tomorrow.